Hi, and welcome to the Arana Hills Church of Christ podcast. We hope this message brings you closer to knowing God, finding freedom in Him, and understanding what He has in store for you and your community. To learn more about Arana Hills Church of Christ, head to aranahills.church. We hope you enjoy this message. Good evening, everybody. So my name's Katie. I think I've probably seen most of you about. I've been part of the Arana community for probably 14 years or so. And this is my little boy over here who's probably going to cry. We've had a big week. Ezra had pretty major surgery on Wednesday. And so as Jenny alluded to, most of this sermon was written like beside a hospital bed and at night on my phone feeding him throughout the night as he was screaming. So I'm just trusting that God uses this vessel to bring the message and it's not about me. So I know he will speak. I spoke this morning. Yes, and I don't remember most of what I said, so I'm trusting that was God. So firstly, I just want to acknowledge the Turrbal people, the traditional custodians of the land on which we're gathering today and on where my family home is as well, and pay my respects to elders present, past and emerging. And this was and always will be Aboriginal land. So, home, being present in place. And I get to speak about home, which is one of my favourite topics. I love home. I love everything about home. We live in a vivid blue Queenslander. And I've got some pictures to show you. It is bright blue. On top of a hill in Meanjing, Brisbane. And we love our home. When we bought it, we thought, oh, we'll get rid of that blue straight away. We'll paint it as soon as we move in. And then we moved in and realised how massive a job that was. And it's still very much blue and probably will be for the next 20 years or so. Our house is known as the Blue Fish Pond House amongst friends. And the story behind that is when we were looking for homes, my little boy who was around he was about two at the time. He came to all the open homes with us and, you know, afterwards we'd get his feedback and what did you think of the house? And you're like, not for us. But this house, there was a fish pond and you can see it in the middle image there. It was just a very basic concrete tub that had two goldfish in it, but he was enamored with it. And so when we came home, he said, it's Blue Fish Pond House. It has to be the Blue Fish Pond House. And when we rang the real estate agent to put the offer in, she said that the owners were selling it with the fish pond. So that was it. We signed the contract on Friday night and we sold our house the next Saturday morning, so about 12 hours later, and it was all really meant to be, and we're extremely privileged and grateful to live there. And I did say this morning that it looks quite beautiful on the outside, but I can promise you inside's quite gross. There's a bright blue and yellow kitchen, and there's orange fish tiles in the bathroom and yellow tiles everywhere, and yes, quite abrasive, but the outside is quite beautiful. We will work on that over time. I absolutely love learning about homes. I love scrolling realestate.com, watching Grand Designs. I know Luke does too. Is there anyone else who loves Grand Designs? Few people. And there's just something so captivating to me about homes. I love when you walk into someone's home, you can learn so much about them just by going through their bookshelf or looking at their paintings and what colour choices and what furniture they have. Like, I just love seeing like that, I guess, more personal insight into people's lives. But home is more than just a place to store our possessions. It means so much more. And as I was pondering the last few weeks what home is, I kind of really struggled to narrow down exactly what it is. And I'd love for you to throw out some words to me if you're comfortable. When I say home, what ideas come to mind? What words come to mind when you think about home for you? Is there anyone who wants to yell something out? Family. Gathering place. Relax, yeah. Food. We're in the right family, Maggie, because they were my food family as well. Other ones I wrote down were peace, security, creativity, joy, laughter, values, community, neighbours. All of these beautiful words that describe home. And for some of you, home may not have been a safe place. And I just want to acknowledge that first up and say I'm really sorry if that has not been your reality, if home has not been a safe place for you, because it should have been. And before I go any further, please know that when I'm talking about home today, I'm talking about safe homes. And if your home is not safe, please come and talk to somebody here if you're safe to do so, so that we can help you. So what really is home? It's more than this physical place, although that's really important and I would have loved to talk about that as well, but I just didn't have the time today. It's more than a feeling. It's more than memories and desires. I feel like when I think about it, it's almost like this spiritual tug or grip to a place and to people. And I say spiritual very intentionally because it feels like something greater than just a feeling. It feels very much in my soul. And I wonder if that's perhaps because God dwells in us and all things good, love, creativity, joy, safety, security, peace, come from God himself. And if we have God dwelling in us and that representation of all things that is good and God, then home is really something inside of us. And whilst home here on earth can be really messy and ugly, and often I don't feel like it's right, I think it's important to remember that we were actually made for somewhere else. We're made to be with God where it's perfect and there is no pain. And so when it feels very difficult here, know that actually God wants us to be home with him in perfect harmony. But while we're here on earth, it has to be important too. This is not just a stopover to glory. There's something greater. And I love that C.S. Lewis quote. Oh, it might have just gone past, sorry. But it was, I just come back to it all the time. Brooke Fraser has a beautiful song called C.S. Lewis Song as well. I find in myself, if I find desires in myself, nothing in this world can satisfy. The only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. Love that. When it feels difficult and wrong, it's because it is and it's not perfect. So why then is home here on earth important? Sending down roots. So I'm going to talk about this Jeremiah passage that we've been following through this series. And I'll just read it out again. This is what the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of Israel, says to all the captives he has exiled to Babylon from Jerusalem. Build homes and plan to stay. Plant gardens and eat the food they produce. Marry and have children, then find spouses for them so that you may have many grandchildren. Multiply, do not dwindle away, and work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, for its welfare will determine your welfare. So here we have God's people, the Israelites, exiled from their home and sent into enemy territory for about 70 years before they were returned to their homeland. And God clearly is telling them here to make Babylon their home, to send out roots. It's not just a stopover on the way to somewhere else. It's important work and meaningful. Similarly for us, our time here on earth is not just a layover. It's where we're called to live deeply meaningful lives. And our God's not about surface living, surface level living or hollow chat and words. He calls us to something so much greater. He's all in. Jesus was all in and he's asking us to do the same. We're called to love deeply and live fully. Now the term living life to the full, I think perhaps conjures up images such as my Google search over here, although not Google, Ecosia, if you haven't switched your browser, plants, trees. Sometimes the searches are, they're not, you can tell it's like not Google. So you have to sometimes scroll a few pages down to find what you're looking for. Anyway, side tangent. When you look at living life to the full, it's yoga on top of mountains and overseas holidays to the snow and sunsets and sunrises and all this amazing beautiful things. But I don't know about you, that's certainly not my reality. It may have been yours before COVID, I'm not quite sure. But for most of us, life doesn't really look like that. The reality of my life is that huge chunks of it seem very average and mundane. And in my season at the moment as a mum of young children, it looks like preparing food, cleaning up after preparing the food, feeding the children the food, cleaning the children from the food, cleaning the walls, the chairs, the floors of the food, and then making food and doing that sick cycle all over again for 60 times in the day. And then I go to bed and then I breastfeed all night and then I get up and I do it all again. It's not yoga on top of a mountain, that's for sure. It's lots of washing, it's messy, it's breaking up fights, it's UN level negotiations with my 4-year-old about putting that one toy away that he can somehow resist for 2 hours. It's definitely ugly, it's boring, it's mundane a lot of the time. And that's okay, that's really normal. I love it still, but it's definitely not mountaintops. The catch is, and why I can keep going, and why I do truly love it, is because I know that where I'm meant to be right now is home. And home is where I am. Living life to the full doesn't mean all of these images that you might search, but it means being fully present and all in, exactly where you are. What a calling to be present in the mundane, even the boring, the uncomfortable, that job you really don't like, that uni course that is really boring, that share house you don't want to live in. Your place, my babies, those parents, that share house, this singleness, it's where you're meant to be. And as long as God has you here, it is His will for you. I know there's often a lot of angst, especially when you're younger or a young Christian, about trying to discover God's will for your life. We spend years preoccupied with trying to understand what God's will for your, what God's plan for your future is. And it's madness because His will for you today is where you are right now. And His will for your future will be revealed in time. But for today, His will is where you are. It's that simple. So He's asking you to send out your roots, embrace it all, and be fully present where you are. Matthew 22:35-40. One of them, an expert in religious law, tried to trap Him with this question. "Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses?" Jesus replied, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments." It's as easy as that and as difficult as that. Transplant shock. So for those who know me will know that I'm quite a gardener. I love gardening. And a big part of my home is growing food and flowers. I love to do that. I spend a lot of time thinking about culture and systems and communities, and I think we've got a problem. I think our culture, and potentially specifically our generation, has a problem with sending out roots. We deal with situations we don't love or we don't want to be in by living these really shallow, surface-level lives because we're scared of being transplanted. We're scared of the hurt and the pain that might come if we have to move on. We wrestle with this constant discontentment, envy, and comparison, which means that we never really embrace where we are fully because we're always looking for something better. And I have experienced this in planting gardens. I wasted years at our last house not wanting to plant the edible garden that I had planned because I didn't want to live in that house forever. And so I thought that if I planted this beautiful garden, it would be too painful to leave. Anyway, in 2019, I started that garden finally after years of living there and staring at this blank patch of bindies. It wasn't even grass. And I planted that garden. And those are images of my first garden. It was packed. It was in our front garden, so all our neighbours could see it on the side of a very busy truck route. And it was incredible. We loved it. I've got so many precious memories of my firstborn in that garden. We spent his whole entire life was out there. And we watched all the creatures come back. And we shared so much food with our friends and just generally learnt so much from that garden. And then what happened? We moved almost to the day a year later after I started, and I had to leave my beautiful garden. And I don't regret it for one minute, because I know that I transformed the soil, I fed the bees, I fed ourselves. It was good work. What I do regret is not starting sooner. I could have started 4 or 5 years before then, and I could have been in this work for years. And I missed out on that because I was too scared to be transplanted. The pain of being transplanted is what makes us resist putting down roots. We withhold from relationships with from neighbours, from opening up our homes, from volunteering with community groups, from throwing street parties, from planting gardens, all to protect ourselves from the pain if we were to leave. And in doing so, we never really live in a way that embraces our place and presence. So moving the story forward, we've moved into the Bluefish Pond house. And the day we moved in, so the next day after we moved in, Eli and I broke ground on our first garden. I was not making that same mistake again. Hadn't unpacked a single box. We lived out of boxes for months, literally, because the garden was priority, and I was 30 weeks pregnant, and I knew that I had a ticking time bomb literally inside of me, and I needed to get it going before I was going to have a newborn. And part of my plan, my landscape design for this backyard, was to plant a big strip of native trees along our back fence line, because it was just a blank kind of canvas, had no shade. And so I put in all of these beautiful trees. You can kind of see them in that middle photo along the back near the kids' mud kitchen area. And my feature plant that was going to grow up to be the shade tree and the climbing tree for my boys was this beautiful flowering gum. And that's the first blooms that it put out on New Year's Day. And it just was like, oh, it's like fireworks, my own fireworks in my own backyard for New Year's, celebrating a new year. And hopefully you agree that it's just the most stunning flower, right? Like, native to Australia, incredible. And I specifically chose this tree because it was grafted to a dwarf rootstock. So that means it had dwarf roots that they wouldn't travel too far, and the plant would only reach about 3 metres. So it's like the only appropriate kind of gum you can have in a suburban backyard, right? Not going to be planting a 20-metre tall gum tree. And because it was grafted, it was like $100. It was the most I'd ever spent on a plant ever. I usually just steal cuttings from people's gardens. But I put in the big bucks for this tree, okay? So it's grown beautifully, tripled its size. It's setting buds now. It's going to be flowering in January. And the other week, last week, our neighbour behind us drove to our house and parked in our driveway to come and chat to us. I was like, oh, what have my children done? And she said, hey, I'm concreting my entire backyard. And I just don't have time for gardening. I just want low maintenance. I'm going to concrete everything. And I want you to pull out all of your native trees along the fence line because I'm scared the roots might crack my concrete. And I was like, what? You're taking out all your plants, putting in concrete, asking me to take out all of my beautiful plants that create this diverse environment for all of our native wildlife because you're scared you're going to crack your concrete? That's when I walked away and let Tom deal with the rest of the conversation because I knew I had nothing positive to add. Honestly couldn't believe it. She printed out the legislation, which indeed tells us that if your roots damage someone else's property, you are liable. And so I pondered on this and I complained and I talked to every friend. I was like, how unfair, how unjust that she asked this of me to pull out all of these beautiful things. And she named my gum specifically because all she saw was gum leaves. And I said, it's a dwarf rootstock. I promise it's 3 meters. If it gets more than that, I'll prune it. It's not going to be a problem. She didn't care. It was a gum tree. It had to come out. And so we pondered and we sat on this. And then one afternoon, Tom and I started digging and we dug the gum tree out. And we tried to transplant it. And this is what it looks like yesterday. Sad. Crunchy. It hardly even lasted a day. It died almost instantly. And I suspected that would happen. It's a large tree. We couldn't get every single root out when we moved it. And we lost our gum tree. So why did we do that? Why did we do this? In a culture that says, no, you matter more. What you care about matters most. Why did I sacrifice my gum tree? And it's for relationship. The only way I could see through this mess to maintain my relationship with this lady was to dig out my tree. And I knew it was going to hurt and I knew I was going to lose it, but that was still more important. And I think this is a really important thing to reflect on when we're talking about sending out roots, because there is going to be pain. When you love something deeply, there is always that risk that it's going to go bad and it's going to hurt. But it's still worth it anyway. And so as a consequence of that, Tom was over there helping her dig out something the other day. Eli bought her flowers. I stuck my head over the fence and said, hey, I can help you do some of those gardens over there if you like. Would you like some cuttings? He's like, yes, I'd love your help. Thank you. I learned that she'd been divorced a few times. She had to sell a beautiful big farm and move to suburbia, and her kids had moved out and didn't want anything to do with her. And I learned all of this and she learned about us. And there's that relationship started because of I dug out my tree. It's not really a sacrifice at all when you think about that long relationship that we're going to be able to build with her. Sending out roots figuratively or literally in our gardens, homes, communities, and into the gloriousness of goodness that God provides for us will always be worth it. So what does presence at home actually look like? Hopefully that's one little example. But do you like my bee meme? I love it. I love bees. And as I've been sitting back there looking at this stage, I was like, beehive. Nobody's mentioned the beehives yet. When is this coming? And AJ said it wasn't. So I was like, awesome, this is my time. I am a bee maniac. I love bees. I will talk about bees. And this is a beautiful little video of Eli as a little bubba watching the release of our first native beehives. And I just posted it, this is not Instagram. I just showed you tonight because his little face of awe and wonderment as watching these tiny little bees come out of the hive just makes me grin. They're tiny, so you can't really see them. They're about 4 millimeters in length. And bees have become a big part of our life. And I think there's a lot we can learn from bees tonight. One of my favorite things to do, and perhaps a calling in my life, is to bring life to barren places. And I love to plant stuff and watch the insect life pour in. Nothing brings me greater joy. And observing how these bees work, I think, can teach us a lot. This is them on some of the flowers. So they're absolutely tiny. They don't produce as much honey as a honeybee, but they're stingless, they're great for kids, and we have 2 hives and we just love having them around. Beehives are amazing little ecosystems. So most Australian native bees are solitary. They live in like brick cracks and they dig burrows in the mud, hang out on branches, but there's about 13 species that are social and they live in hives, usually in a hollow of a tree. Our hives are rescued from water meter boxes because they often kind of make a nest in there, and then when the water meter guys come, they spray them. So people can rescue them out of the water meter and transfer them to a hive. That's how we've got our two. And inside the hive, it's incredible. This is inside one of our hives. This is a Tetragonula hockensii hive. And so their brood looks quite different to Carbonara, which is Carbonaria. I got dinner on my mind. Who make more of a spiral brood. But this is where their babies are living in their little honey pots. And they get the smell when you, even in summer, you don't have to open it, but the smell that comes out of their hives is incredible. Inside the hive, the worker bees, so there's the queen, the worker bees, the female, and the drones. Now, I'm completely leaving the drones out of the story because all they do is hang around hoping to mate with the queen. That's their entire existence. So we'll just flick them to the side and talk about the girls because they're the ones that get it all done. So the female worker bees, they all have really specific jobs. And when they're first born, when they pupate and come out of their little pot, they do all the work inside the hive. So they're feeding the baby bees, they're cleaning, they're making wax, they're making honey, what else? Feeding the queen, all those kind of things. And then the later half of their life, they go outside and do more outside work, which is collecting the nectar, pollen and resin. And like the whole how bees make honey blows my mind. So the bee will go out to that flower, collect pollen, they roll it into a ball, stick it into their pollen baskets on their back legs. Then they bring it home, pass it on to their sister bee, and the sister bee uses her mandibles and her tongue and her fans to fan it into honey. Like, how does it go from pollen on a flower to, is this blowing anyone else's mind? Like, it honestly, and then how small those bees are, this smidgen, like, how do they even transfer that smidgen of honey into a honey pot to make a jar of honey? Like, that is incredible. And each bee has a specific job and they all are working together for the health of the hive. And what really resonates with me is that most of that work is really, really mundane. My bees spend days cleaning out poop from their hives. You watch them, they come out and they drop the poop and they go back in and they get some more poop and they drop it onto my deck, ironically, for me to clean up, just to add more poo to my life. And they do it over and over again and you'll wake up and the whole deck will be covered in poo. Or one day they might have a bringing out the dead day and they'll bring out all the dead bees and drop them on the deck. They're busy. They're doing mundane work. But I don't think bees sit around and think, oh, geez, poo day. That's so much worse than making honey day. It's just jobs and they just get on with it and it's all part of a healthy hive. One job is not better than the other. I really resonate with the bringing out poo days at the moment. And it just, there's a sense of solidarity with the native bee as it just cleans all day. And it just reminds me of that Colossians verse, Colossians 3, work willingly at whatever you do as though you are working for the Lord rather than people. And it challenges me. Do I work and live in a way that truly builds up health in my home? Am I fully present in my place? Am I engaged with the people in my home and the earth around it? Or am I distracted, which leaves my home, my hive, vulnerable to attack? Presence to me is believing that where I am at that moment is important and worthy of my attention, even if it's just cleaning up poop. Presence is stability and an active investment into the place I'm in, the people, the land, the neighborhood. And I think real emphasis on that active word. We are not just bystanders waiting to get to heaven. There's important work to do right here. 1 Peter 4, 8-11. Most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other, for love covers a multitude of sins. Cheerfully share your home with those who need a meal or a place to stay. God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. Do you have the gift of speaking? Then speak as though God himself were speaking through you. Do you have the gift of helping others? Do it with all the strength and energy that God supplies. Then everything you do will bring glory to God through Jesus Christ. All glory and power to him forever and ever. Amen. Practically, what presence in the home will look like for you is going to be different to me. And for me right now, it's being that secure base and safe hands for my children. It's opening my home and my garden to neighbours. There's always children running in and out of our house, throughout our neighbours, we've got like 11 boys amongst us. It's not a single girl. Like, it's chaos all of the time. And it's amazing. I love it. Last night, my neighbour had a kid with a fever and didn't have any Panadol. So I got out of bed and ran over at 10 o'clock at night and dropped some Panadol on her front door. And she does that for me regularly. She will bring over meals. Our other neighbour let us jump in her pool yesterday. It's just how our little hive is working. We've only been there for a year, but it's been active and intentional. And we have very strong, amazing relationships with those around us. Presence to me at home is leaving my phone plugged in a different room so my children can see my face and not my face looking at a screen. That's really important. Presence for me is gathering all my family for a meal at the table and we light a candle to signify this is sacred space we're entering into together. And sometimes they complain and they whinge and Eli gets up 60,000 times. But he knows, and he gets so excited when the candle goes on because he's got our full attention. There are so many opportunities that arise from being fully present and fully aware of what's going on around you. It's an exciting life. You get to see all of these new and meaningful parts of your life that you probably didn't think about before. It brings so much joy and abundance to spend time just watching the bees. This is where I get really excited if I wasn't excited enough. It kicks up a notch when we go back to that verse in Jeremiah again. The end bit really gets me excited. And work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, for its welfare will determine your welfare. Now, I've coined this the pollination effect, so you heard it here first tonight, bringing back the bees. We think about this bee, this healthy hive, healthy bees performing to their potential, building a healthy hive that's making honey, which is amazing and sweet and beautiful. But the process of getting to the honey is what really excites me, and that's the pollination. So bees pollinate 70 of the 100 crops that feed 90% of the world. So these tiny little insects are literally holding up the natural world around us. And if we lose bees, we lose all of those crops. We lose all of the animals who eat those crops. We lose all of the humans who eat those animals, all the way up to us. In the process of making honey, bees pollinate, sustaining the world around us. And how heartbreaking would it be to think of a hive just focusing on itself and just feeding itself and just keeping it going, living at this surface level, not really expanding, not increasing, not really building much honey, just kind of surviving. When they could have been pollinating the entire suburb, that is heartbreaking. Is that what we're doing in the church? Are we just building ourselves up, kind of living the surface level life, but not actually willing to take the risk and send out roots, build relationships, pollinate and bring hope to our community? Is that what you're doing in your personal life? It's challenging. I get goosebumps thinking about it because I don't want my life to be a waste. The cool thing about pollinating the community is that as plants are pollinated, they set viable seed. So if a plant's not pollinated, the seed isn't any good. Most plants. I won't get into horticulture. Go with the analogy here. One plant comes up, produces multiple seeds. The seeds fall to the ground and the bees have pollinated them, so they're viable. Where one plant was, there's now 70, 100 plants popping up everywhere, providing more food, more nectar, more pollen for bees. So as the bees are pollinating, they're setting viable seed, creating more food and nectar for themselves. And it's this ripple spiraling effect where the bees are healthy, the hive is healthy, the community is healthy, the community is healthy, and it's feeding the bees. Does that make sense, that cycle? And it's exactly what God was saying in Jeremiah. Your welfare is their welfare. Their welfare is your welfare. Healthy homes influence healthy communities. and healthy communities influence healthy homes. I think it's also important to remember that this is generational work. As I was thinking about that bee making that smidgen of honey, it would never live to see one full little honey pot, but it does its job anyway. And it's building on the bees that came before it, and it's trusting the bees after it to take that on. So it is with us, so it was with the Israelites. We may not be seeing huge generational change in our time, but we're part of the picture, and we're going to be trusting it on to the next. I'm reading this beautiful book at the moment, and I thought I'd just share from it to wrap up tonight. It's called The Good Life, which I love because Tom and I talk about what the good life is all the time. And I also have a bit of an obsession with the BBC sitcom The Good Life. Has anybody here watched it? It's my dad's fault. It's brilliant. You can find it on YouTube. When was it made? Like the 70s? It's about this middle-aged, middle-class couple in England who decide to blow it all away and grow all of their own food, and it's just hilarious. Anyway, and I somehow ended up doing the same thing. But this book is written by Hannah Maloney, and she is an amazing climate activist who I've been following for many years. And she talks in this book about radical hope. And I just thought I'd share this term with you tonight because I think it's just so inspiring. She says, radical hope is a verb. It describes having hope in the face of huge uncertainty and knowing that what you do to bring about positive change might not work, but you do it anyway because there's a chance that it just might. Radical hope is not blind optimism. It is love and courage in action. And I think if the church is going to have a motto, that should be it. Radical hope is the ordinary person's protest that's integrated into daily life, the mundane, the boring, the stuff we do every day, over and over. The goal is to change our current trajectory by grabbing hold of the human spirit and the many positive opportunities presenting themselves to transform our collective story to ensure justice for all living beings. What an enormous undertaking. Changing the system to grow a better world for ourselves, our households, neighbourhoods, and whole regions or countries is hard work. It might sound daunting, but we simply need to change our mindset to play the long game. We need to foster joy in our lives in order to sustain and nourish ourselves. What I've realised is that a good life may be a hard life, but that through this hardness can come wondrous, glorious freedom for everyone. So this is where you'll find me, and me too, Hannah. Head down, hands busy, heart forward, working in the hardness, fueled by excitement, radical hope, and love for the good life that we can build for ourselves and for future generations. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this place, this space, this time right now. Lord, please give us courage to send down roots. Please challenge us when we're living a surface level life. Spur us on, convict us to put down roots and build those meaningful relationships with those around us. Help us to be more like the bee. Help us to work in the mundane and the boring, as if we're working for you. Help us to gather collectively and work as we pollinate the suburbs around us. Lord, bless this church and this work. Give us courage to stick where we are and not chase something better, but to trust that you have us where you want us to be, and that everything is important to you. Thank you, Lord.
Thank you for joining us today. If you were encouraged by the message and would like to hear more sermons like this, make sure you hit subscribe. follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. To experience other messages, videos, and live services, head to aranahills.church and navigate to the Resources tab. Thanks for listening.